Today we continue with what we've left off since last time. We've said that in the process of meditation, there are five meditative elements that you really have to go through in the process of meditation. And even before that, we said, when a person is meditating, how does one know what level I'm at? Where do I go from here? What is regarded as a higher level? What is a lower level? So I've been meditating for a number of years, and I don't know what do I keep on doing that? How do I know what level I am in? Am I improving? Am I getting better and better? Or what happened to me? And I mentioned that according to the sutras, there are certain levels. The first level is the Kamadhatu Samadhi, because we are living in a three strata universal arrangement, whatever you call it. The Kamadhatu, which is the world with desires, the world that we're living in, and the higher level is world without desires. They have no desires, a much higher level. We call that Rupadhatu. They don't have any desires in that kind of living, but they still have a body form, a much higher level of sentient beings. And the third level is much higher, which is Arupadhatu. That is, even the form doesn't exist. They only have consciousness in there. The crudest form is the form with materiality and desires. That's the form that we have. We take a body form, molecules, protons, neutrons, we can see things, and we have desires for eating, sleeping, sex, and all that. Those are kind of desires that pull us down to Kamadhatu, the world that we're living in now. We can't get away with it. And we think that these desires are good even. But these are the desires that pull us down to here. In another level, some people call that heavenly levels or heavens, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, they don't have any desires. No more of these desires. They are living much longer than us, and their level of happiness is much, much higher than us because they have no desires. But they still have attachment to form. A bodily form. And then, if they get rid of the bodily form through enlightenment, then they go to a higher level, which is arupa. Ah, that means without. Rupa is matter. Without matter world, they only have consciousness left. But they still have consciousness left, so they still go through reincarnations. If you get out from this three strata, you are at nirvana. No more reincarnation, no more life and death, no more rebirth. So even if you are at a very high level of heavenly level, you still have a form because we attach to form. That reminds me of a saying by a Chinese philosopher, Lao Ji, and he says that our problem is we attach to form. We have a form, which means that we have a body. We have a body, existence of the body, and this is our burden. Only when we don't have this burden that we are out from reincarnation. But this burden is a karmic burden that we've been carrying through ages, through millions of lives. We can't get out. And in the history of mankind, there was one person who was able to get out, and he was called Buddha. He got out from form, he got out from materiality, he got out from relationships, from desires, all these, from fame, from reputation. He got out all of this bondage, no more bondage. He got out. So what's the purpose of meditation? Meditation is to purify your consciousness. Of course, our consciousness is in a form, attached to a form, and also to not just the form, to all these desires that we have. So when we don't have these, we get out. We get out from the cocoon of life. We have a cocoon that binds us. We call it the fetters, the bondage. And why do we attach? Now, in this session, I'm not going to go back to the previous session. I'm going to explain when we're meditating, how do we feel? What's the process that we're going through? But one has to know what levels first. So we have the what we call the Kamadhatu Samadhi, the level, and then Anagamya Samadhi. What is Anagamya? Anagamya is not coming back. The Samadhi that leads you not coming back to this world. Go on a higher level is first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, and then you, of course you go a much higher level. So what are these meditative elements? Talking about meditative elements, we have immediately, we need a review of our mental experiences first. Remember, we have a four parts of mental experience in our meditation. In our meditation, our mentality is going through four parts, eight consciousnesses. Four parts in eight consciousnesses. The first part is process of perception. The second part is process of cognition. Third part is process of egotizing or personalization. Or some people call it a process of emotional reaction. The fourth part is process of storage. Very analytical. Our mental experiences has four parts. Process of perception is our eyes, our nose, our ears, the tongue, our body, all the functions, the five organs react to externalities, and we attach to them through the process of cognition, which is the function of mano. Mano is the manager. So mano, together with the five, mano itself, it's a mental part, a consciousness, with the five foregoing senses attached to things. But the mano is more rational. It analyzes, recollect, categorize, interpret, projection, inferences of perception, giving meaning to what was perceived. What was perceived through the first five senses, the only perception, only the process of perception. The process of perception has at the same time goes through the process of cognition, which is to remember, to budget, to infer, to recollect, to interpret, to categorize. You do that simultaneously. And then at the same time, you do the process of egotizing it. You personalize everything. Personalization of experiences and arousal of emotional reaction to pleasant and unpleasant feelings. You do that at the same time. You egotize it or you personalize it. This is short, this is tall, this is rich, this is poor, this is a man, this is a woman, this is beautiful, this is ugly. I don't know. You are living in a dualistic stigmatization. You stigmatize everything, you label everything, you personalize everything. You because of this personalization, your concomitant emotion arise. Somebody hurt your dignity, your emotion of anger arise and work towards it, and you fight back, you argue, you fight, I don't know what you do. All kinds of actions because of this process of egotizing. Who does not egotize? Raise your hands. I don't personalize, I don't egotize. Raise your hands. No exception, right? Everybody egotize. Everybody personalize. And you think it is good. You listen to a ball game. What are the commentators do? But this team is doing that. This team should have been doing that. They already look at the ball game with the tainted glasses, and they communicate with tainted opinion and information through the broadcasting to all the audience. You think they are objective? No one is objective in the real world. In the world of reality, no one is objective. Everyone is personalizing. Everyone is egotizing. And they think it's good. And some people egotize with flowery language, eloquence. You can't compete with them in their eloquence, in the talk, in the speeches, because they are in the process of expert in egotizing, expert in opinionating, expert in personalization. There are people like that. They're the best commentators. You can't fight them in any of these speeches and debate and all that, because they know how to do it. So that's the process of egotizing. But all these, perception, cognition, egotizing, are being stored. Nothing goes away. You think what you've been doing would go away, nobody noticed, nobody care? It's all in your memory. Every thought of wickedness, every thought of selfishness, every thought of compassion, every thought is registered. Every volitional action is registered. Every volitional speech is registered. Where? Do you have a computer drive? That's the computer drive. Nothing goes away. How much can a computer drive store? I remember when I first learned computer, the memory is very limited. I run programs by cards, and I have to worry about, can they contain all this programming language? But now it's immeasurable. You can even get that from the clouds. How immeasurable is the clouds? I tell you, even the cloud has a limit. But our storage of the coming energy is unlimited, is immeasurable. So you really have to be very careful with each thought that you have. Of course, if the thought is carried into action, it's already a volitional action and speech, and that's what we call what? Vipaka. V-I-P, a.k.a. Vipaka, the consequential karmic energy so created. Okay, so always remember these four parts of your consciousness. Some people just know the perception. They just perceive. And with the cognitions, they attach. With the egotizing, they what? They obsess. And all these things that store. Nothing can go away. Not under the sea, not into the rocks and caves, not under the tunnel. You can't hide. You can run, but you cannot hide. That's the saying. You can run, you cannot hide. Because you find out. So be very careful. Be a very good person. Whatever goes out, bounce back to you. You think you can get the advantage of being selfish, and you personalize everything, and you get the advantage now? The more you give out, the more it bounces back to you. Multifold bounce back. Kinetic energy. Whatever comes out, bounce back, multifold. Bad or good? So what is your choice? All right, so remember that mental experience. Now, the five meditative elements that we've been talking, inquiry and inference. When we are doing meditation, we have these five meditative elements right in the meditation. Inquiry, the process of cognizing and querying the meaning of the perceived externalities in the stabilization and introspection of the mind. When you're meditating, your mind could be going all over the place. Your mind could be sleeping. Your mind is still active. But your mind is still active, but it could be in the process of stabilization. You are in the process of trying to stabilize it. Or you're in the process of agitation. Nobody can read your mind. I don't have supernatural power. I don't know what happened to your mind. But your mind surely is non. It is always active. And the Buddha said, when you're doing meditation, there's two parts. One, the first one is to stabilize your mind first. Can you stabilize your mind? No, I can't, because when I'm meditating, my mind is all over the place. I'm thinking of past, present, and future. No, I don't feel comfortable. Or I feel numb, or this is not a good environment, or no, the other guy is snoring. You know, all kinds of things go through your mind. And then you need this conceptualization to put your mind into the right direction. The process of arriving at a conclusion based on the right introspection in the awakening of the mind. Then you know, oh, I shouldn't be sleeping. I shouldn't have my mind wandering all over the place. I should keep my object of attention to Anapanasati and my breath, in and out breath, and that's my breath. That's how I stabilize my mind, and I'm using my concept of sunyata, emptiness, to avoid all the obsession and attachment I have. I should use introspection of the body, of the feeling, of impermanence. I should have all this wisdom that work towards it, to a conclusion that I should be gearing towards only enlightenment and not avidya, which avidya is being ignorance. So actually your mind is working at the same time. How do you work? You need the right introspection to work through it. You need the right training. Meditation is training. You need a lifetime training. Some people, after training a few years, they're getting to be a better and better person. Some people training for a few years, they don't know. They're still selfish, egotizing, emotional. But if you are a meditator, if you have to write your gear towards the right introspection, doing it in the right way, you are on your way to spiritual odyssey, to spiritual awakening. But it takes time. And this spiritual awakening will not impede your daily life. It only increase your happiness. It only increase your wisdom to resolve daily problems. It only improve your wisdom in resolving and handle sufferings. But how many people really pay attention to this kind of training, meditation? So inquiry and inference are working out the four parts of your consciousness, the four parts, the four mental experiences, which I mentioned, which is this. Inquiry and inference would help you in the process of perception, you won't attach, in the process of cognitions, you won't stigmatize, in the process of egotizing, you will not be personalizing things, you will be more compassionate, you will be more altruistic, we call it altruistic. And then all these things get stored in your karmic energy, and if the storage of your karmic energy is getting wholesome and wholesome every day, you have a happier and happier life. If the storage is garbage every day, you're going to a miserable life. What is your selection? What do you want to choose? Do you want to choose every Saturday I go partying, I go karaoke, you know, fun, you know, or every Saturday you want to have an introspection of the right meditation to purify your mind, to throw out all the garbage in you by meditation? How many people would spend time in training their mind, purifying their mind? And how many people would just use this time to have fun? I mean, whatever fun, pleasurable fun, funds that would increase the pleasure of your senses, of your eyes, of your ears. You want to listen to music, you want to involve only in music, you want only want to see sensual things, or you want to see, to taste the flesh and blood of animals, you know. You want to body touch, you want to live in a grand house, relationships and all that, which one you want? All right, getting back to this, inquiry and inference, we know that the brain is something physical. The mind is something, it's not physical. There's no such thing as a concrete mind, because the mind is only an activity, it's not an entity. You know what I mean? The mind is not an entity. You can touch entity, you can like touch, but the mind is an activity. It changes all the time. The brain is an entity. I don't know how many pounds the brain is. It's an entity, but the mind is an activity, and an activity changes all the time. An activity could be wholesome, unwholesome, or neutral. But the activity would affect the entity. The entity would affect the activity, which means that the brain affects the mind, and the mind affects the brain. And whatever thought goes through your mind, whatever volitional action and speech, The mind works, the brain works out not only mentally, but also physically. The mind has, according to some neuroscientists, the mind has cerebral cortex, which is the learning brain. We have the cerebral cortex, which is the prefrontal lobe. In other words, this is all the learning part in here. We also have the limbic system in the brain, which is the emotional brain. That's the physical part of it. We also have what we call the amygdala. Amygdala is the reaction to certain things. Sometimes you react with emotion, sometimes you react with positive emotion or wholesome emotion, sometimes with unwholesome emotions. That is the amygdala. The amygdala is like the security guard that helps you. You know, you put your fingers in the fire. You don't want to put your fingers in the fire because it would burn your finger and you will treat your finger. So the amygdala will tell you, don't touch the fire. You learned that when you were a baby, amygdala. So when you go to the edge of the cliff, the amygdala will remind you, don't go too close because you fall down the cliff. So everybody has this amygdala inside the brain. They also have the hippocampus, which is the regulator of emotions, because somehow we were able to control our emotions in some situations, but somehow most of the time our emotions could be unconscious. You don't even know why you get angry. You don't even know why you get jealous, because it's just come out in you. So in other words, the physical part, the brain, is always working with the mental part. The activity cannot be away from the entity. The entity cannot be away from the activities. You know what I mean? Whatever happened in the company, if each transaction is just an activity, but the activity would affect the entity. How can a company have no activities? How can activities have no support for the activities? So in other words, the physical and the mental is always working in conjunction with each other. One would affect the other. So that means if you really meditate well, if you are always improving your mentality, if you're meditating with wisdom, if you're meditating with compassion, your physical would change at the same time. So if you're able to stabilize your mind, you achieve at the right stabilization, and in the introspection, you have the right introspection, somehow you get a balance. So you're balancing your physical with your mental, which is scientific. Because if you're always emotional, your brain will excrete a lot of emotional hormones into the systems that would hasten your heartbeat, that would make your heartbeat faster, that would make you angry. And a lot of hormones come out because of what you think. So if you really meditate in the right way, the right introspection in inquiry, vichara, or in the inference, vikakta, then as time goes on, you will have sukha. What is sukha? Comfort. The state of complete relaxation of the body resulting from stabilization of the mind. You will feel extremely comfortable. You will feel extremely, almost like a blissful. And then as time goes on, you will also have contentment, the state of happiness resulting from the tranquility of the mind now free from emotions. You have contentment. In the Pali language, it's pitti. So not a single second of the meditation time is wasted. Not a single minute of pleasurable enjoyment is not without karmic energy. It all is related. So this contentment with the right inquiry, the right inference, then we'll have comfort and contentment would automatically come out. So sometimes in your meditation, you will feel extremely blissful. It could be just a glimpse. It could be just for a few seconds. It could be just for 1 minute. For 1 minute, you all of a sudden feel you're completely in bliss. You're completely tranquil. You're completely free from emotions. That happened. If you have the right inquiry, the right inference. That's the reason why you have to have the right introspection. When I first start out, I said meditation is in two parts. The one part is what? Samadhi. The other part is vipassana. Samadhi, if you have the right samadhi, you have stabilization. If you have the right introspection, you will arrive at samadhi. So we've been talking about that. Don't lose our broad topic. We're talking about meditation in two parts. We have been learning just the first part, but learning the first part has to be combined with the second part. Every time we say in meditation for beginners, we have the three A's of meditation. The first A is adjustment to the body. The second is the adjustment to the breath. The third is the adjustment to the mind. We give you a cram course to let you focus. Can you focus? To some people, they just come for one time, they're gone. We don't even see them again. They think the meditation is just, you know, it's a new, modern habit that people like to have, because nowadays people like yoga, yogi, vegan, you know, eating good food and doing healthy meditation to improve health. They only look at meditation as a health improvement technique. It will give you health improvement because the mental part affects the physical part. You don't have to look for health. If you are mentally healthy, your physical health will come at the same time. One cannot be healthy without being mentally healthy. So in other words, your mind affects your body. The physical body can be cured sometimes by medicine, chemical medicines. But the mental part, it's still unfathomable. Many scientists do not even know what's in there. They're only studying it. And we always say that the neuroscientists come up with some concepts. They say we have two parts of the brain. The left side of the brain, this is the left side, or the right side of the brain. They call it the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. And they identified, which has to be proven, and somehow they prove it by experiments. The left side of the brain is the logical brain, the rational brain. The time includes now, current, past, and future. It includes a language center to describe, to categorize, to communicate, to egotize, and all that is the left side of the brain. But most of the time, we're using the left side of the brain, the learning part, the ego part too. And the right hemisphere is the divinity part, the timeless part, the moment of now part, the emphatic part, blissful part, tranquility part. So this part is the part of the brain that is divinity, that is meditative, that is tranquility, that is non-self, that is no attachment. But we haven't explored this part of the brain that well. We only have been using the left side of the brain, according to some neuroscientists, that's what we're doing. Science can only look at things that the sensory organs can perceive. Science cannot do any experiments on things that the senses cannot perceive. If they can't see, they hear, they can't hear, they can't do it. All lab tests has to be tested by the senses. But how trustworthy are the senses? Senses are not trustworthy. Our senses are not even better than a rat. Do you know that? The senses of a rat are even better than the senses of a dog. That's what I found out yesterday. Because in the household, I was told that they have a lot of rats. And somehow they say, a guy suggested, we put some cage, a trap in there to trap all these rats. So they put 5 cages in there. And you know what they put in the cages? Cheeseburger. Because they know that rats like cheese. They put cheese in there. And they put cheese in all those cages with as a trapping cage. And they put 5 or 6 in there. They put it overnight for a few hours. The next morning, they saw rats in there, usually small ones. And then they say, we caught 6 of them, so there will be no more rats. And later they find out that there are more rats, even if they keep on catching them. So the next day they put another 6 cages in there. And the next morning they found the 6 rats trapped into the cages. And within a week, you know how many rats they caught? 76 within a week. You know why? Because the rats can smell this cheese miles away. And then suddenly there was a clever lady, and she thought, why don't we just stop attracting rats with cheese? Let's keep our house clean. We do a major cleaning, mop everything, make everything clean, and we don't put any cheese anywhere. We lock up all those garbage bags, seal them up, and we don't put things overnight on the table and clean everything with detergents, and let's see what happened. They did it for 2 days, the cleaning. They didn't put any cages anywhere. They found out that there are no rats anymore. Because they use cheese to attract those rats, and these rats have senses that are better than dogs. They can smell miles away. You see? Our human senses are not better than dogs, because dogs' ears, the rats have very good nose. Dogs have very good ears. Dogs can listen 1 or 2 miles away. A siren is going to come into this row. Before the siren even let you listen, you can hear it, the dog's already barking. You know why? Because he can listen to the siren of the ambulance 2 miles away. And only 1 minute when the ambulance arrived could be able to hear the actual sound of the siren. But the rat's nose are very sensitive. So our human senses are not trustworthy. We're not even better than rats sometimes in certain situations, and dogs. So this is what scientists slowly discover. But up to now, they think that this is what the left hemisphere of the brain is doing, and the right hemisphere, this is what they're doing. So these are the 5 meditative elements: inquiry, influence, comfort, and contentment. When you have all these 4 present, then you come up to stillness of the mind, which is ekagata. The tranquility of the mind that is completely free from the conflict between the cognitive mind, the mano, and the citta, the manas. Now it arriving at mental consonance. Usually we have cognitive dissonance. You know the difference between dissonance and consonance? Dissonance is they don't agree. The rational mind and the emotional mind, they always attack at war. They don't agree with each other. And what is devastating is that the emotional mind is always in control. That's the reason why you get mad more easily than you being rational. So there's a conflict. But when you have the stillness of mind, you arrive at a mental consonance. The rational mind and the emotional mind, they more or less agree, and you start to calm down. So meditation will help in people who are emotional, who are depressive, who always have fear and anxiety. But you need the right meditation though. You need to have the right introspection the right stabilization. So you really need someone who knows. Don't meditate by looking at just a video or a book, or don't just get teaching from someone who just teach from a book. You could jeopardize your everything. You could jeopardize your meditation. And if you don't really know how to do it, if you go astray, you could run into problems like Kundalini syndromes, which are difficult to handle. So maybe don't mix your meditation with Qigong. Don't do it at the same time. Don't think that Qigong will increase your strength in meditation. You could get into trouble. Because when you do Qigong and meditation at the same time, your Qi and your meditation could be so powerful that you may have a Kundalini syndrome. But somehow the Kundalini syndrome, some people call it Kundalini awakening, would be helpful to you, but you really have to go through the trauma of Kundalini syndrome. Have you heard of this term? So just meditate. Don't meditate for too long, maybe just half an hour, and don't mix up your Qigong or your yoga, certain yoga exercise with the meditation. Just meditate enough to help yourself to let go, and that will be sufficient. It's just like some Chinese Taoist monk said that. They give us an example, an analogy. He said that when you are boiling soup, the soup of enlightenment, for example, you boil it. When you boil it at a level that is boiling, you have to control your fire. You have to have the right level of fire. If you continue to boil and boil and boil, it will spill all over the place. You get into trouble. So you really have to make sure that you have the right fire. In a bonfire that you add the logwood onto it, the wood, you have to watch the fire. The fire has to be just right. If your fire is not strong enough, it will never get to the boiling point. You can never have a good bowl of soup. If after you boil it, you continue to boil it, spill all over the place, you get into trouble. You just have to have the right equilibrium, the right fire. And that judgment is not easy to come by. For someone who is careless in meditation, for someone who does not know or depend on a teacher who himself or herself teach from a book, you could run into the danger. So watch it. I'm not discouraging you. It's just watch it and be very careful with having the right fire. Don't let your soup boiling to such a point that it will spill all over the place. And have the right fire. If you don't have the right strength in the fire, it would never get boiled to the point that is useful to you. In some cases, I would like to give the analogies of training yourself in meditation is like training yourself how to box. You are a boxer. You are boxing with the reality of life. You're boxing with all this bad karmic and wholesome energy confronting you. You need a trainer, the right training. It's not easy. But it doesn't mean that we don't want to do it. We still have to do it. All those who are working in the path of enlightenment, in spite of all this hardship, they are willing to take this and do it. And they become the successful people, the successful meditators. So we always say, if you really go through the hardship, finally, you'll be coming out smelling like roses. At that time, you are a good meditator. You are out from samsara. You're out from karmic energy that bound you. All this different level, in the first level, Kamadhatra Samadhi, you may encounter all these. You have to encounter inquiry, inference, comfort, and mental contentment. If you're successful with inquiry, if you're successful with inference, then you will have comfort and mental contentment. You will have the right inference right inquiry, right inference, then comfort, the physical comfort will come out, then the mental contentment will come out. These are the five feelings that you will have. And then if you go a higher level, anagamiya samadhi, which is the samadhi. You know what is samadhi? You should know, right? It's beyond the consciousness level, the ecstasy of it, the beyond, you know, the samadhi level. So if you have a higher level, which is called anagamiya samadhi, you begin to have one more element in it, stillness of mind, ekagata. You have one more element in it because you're at a higher level. I tell you the truth, I haven't been really good with the first four, not to say stillness of mind. And even if you have stillness of mind, how long? You could have a stillness of mind when you're meditating, during your meditation. But once you're out from meditation, when you go out to react to the world, you start to have all these stigmatization, egotizing, or emotional reactions. You may have it when you are meditating. But once you're out from meditation, you get mixed with the world again, you have the same problems. If you can prolong this stillness of mind, wherever you go, 24 hours, you are a Buddha already. Everything's different from different. And then we go a higher level, the first jhana. The first jhana has, you still have to have inquiry, inference, comfort, contentment. You already have the stillness of mind. Even if you are in the first jhana, you still have to work at it. It doesn't mean that I arrive at the first jhana, oh, I finished. There's no finishing work in meditation. It's a lifelong process until you're out from samsara. And then you go into the second jhana. When you meditate and meditate to have the stillness of mind, then you will find out that this inquiry that I have, this anapanasati, this Buddhist concepts of emptiness, these are disturbance to me. I don't even need this anymore. I need them when I first start, but now they are disturbing to my stillness. Thinking about wisdom is the disturbance to me. Thinking about not letting go itself is a disturbance to me. When I first started, I learned to let go. But then if I have this let go thought, it's still a disturbance. I want to get rid of that too. You understand what I mean? You are at a higher level. The letting go is not clean to you anymore. Even the letting go has to be let go. So you let go of an inquiry, you let go of your inference. And then you go into the third jhana. You don't want a comfort. Even the idea of feeling comfort is a disturbance to you. What do you mean by comfort? That concept doesn't exist in my mind. This comforting concept disturbed me. I want to throw it away. And then you get into the fourth jhana. Even the feeling of contentment in my mind, I want to throw it away. It's disturbing me. I have the stillness of mind. Why do you throw the concept of contentment in my mind? I want to get rid of this. I want to get rid of like my clothes. I'm in a room that has no temperature. That has no concept of temperature. Why do you want me to wear so many of these burdens of clothes? This entire, I shouldn't use that word, some people may have mistaken it, this entire nudity of opinions, of concepts, of encumbrances should be all out. But you still have this concept of nudity in you, that should go out too. You only have this stillness of mind. You don't want any inquiry anymore. You don't want any inference. You don't need the comfort. You don't need the contentment. But all these become a disturbance, no matter how good they are. They should be all gone. And what's left is only this one pure, stillness of mind. And the Buddha said, this concept of stillness of mind, throw it away. This is only throw it away. That's the time when you are out from the fourth jhana. No more stillness of mind. You don't need that. It's a concept in you. That is the purest concept. But you don't need this concept. So you're actually taking piece by piece and piece by piece of all your attachment. You think you have work enough to get rid of your attachment? Even the stillness of mind attachment has to go. Not to say you think you're letting go of depression, of fear, of anxiety. That's just the beginners, for the beginners. Well, we're not even successful in the beginning approach. How can we have stillness of mind? It's extremely difficult. But it does not mean that we don't work at it. That's the reason why we have to have the right efforts in doing it. We must be determined to do it. Only the one who is determined to do it in spite of all this hardship will be the one who become the Buddha, who become the person who get enlightened. So it's not easy. But it doesn't mean that we don't have to do it. We can't do it. You have to do it.